So we're in the middle of the offseason, and quarterbacks are staying or going, and National Signing Day 2 is coming up. There's a bunch of stuff going on, but we hope you pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston. As always, you guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Podbean, and anywhere else you can find a podcast. Today we're going to be going over what just happened over the past three games. We left off the last show saying, what if Texas goes 3-0, and they did the exact opposite? We'll take the blame for that. We'll go over what happened there, why is Texas still so highly rated on KenPom, and then preview the Red River clank out against Oklahoma. Yes, I did say clank out, because both teams are not the best at shooting threes. But before we do that, let's go ahead and do what we always do and pretend you're getting to know us. I need like some intro music into this, like do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Anyways.
That was good.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So this pretend you're getting to know us this week is, if you could be in the background of any famous photo, what would it be and what would you be doing? And here's the thing also, I would love to get to meet the fans as well. So on Twitter, on the Inside Texas post, on the Barking Carnival post, on the Reddit post, wherever you guys find the show, let us know what your answer to this question is, because I love reading the responses. But we'll start off with Johnny. Johnny, if you were in the background of any famous photo, what would it be and what would you be doing?
So I felt like the only one I came up with. Well, no, that's not true. I had a Hindenburg joke in there somewhere, but what I decided would be the most appropriate.
You see, your problem was.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like me with a lighter, like, oops, you know. So I decided that I would like to be at the in the photo of Lee Harvey Oswald getting shot, but like I'm in the background completely surprised. Like I don't have any concept of the fact that he got shot. I just like see a camera and I'm like giving the thumbs up. Like I don't know. Like I'm over there just like, oh hey paparazzi, check that out. Like hey, I'm near Lee Harvey Oswald. Isn't this crazy? You know, like I'm like two guys away from Jack Ruby or something. Like that's what I think I would want to be.
That's a good answer. That's a good answer. Now Tim, famous photograph. What would you be doing in?
Well, shucks.
Which photo?
That is uncomfortably close to what I would say. So the photo that I always think, so I teach journalism in my school, and one of the photos that we use almost every year when we're talking about photography is a National Geographic photo of this kind of like hauntingly beautiful.
It's the natives with the boobs, right?
Yeah, and the dicks are way down low. Beautiful. Those dicks are so long. But this tribal girl. Like I don't even know. Like it seems like she's from like some. Anyways, but she's got those like glowing green eyes. You know what I mean? And she's kind of piercing.
She's from Was it Pakistan?
I feel like it's Middle East
or no,
somewhere.
Afghanistan. She's from Afghanistan. Yeah. I remember it? Yeah.
But like we talk about that photo all the time of just like how simple and yet how. Like how stunning it is, and like you know this. Yeah. Anyways, so
I know where this is going.
But very, very comparably to Johnny. Like so, in high school and college, and like right away after, I was somewhat renowned from my friends of like every time we took a picture, I had like Johnny said, two thumbs up, roughly shoulder length apart, head cocked a little bit, and my mouth wide open in a large open mouth smile. And so, like, any...
And a full head of hair
right,
as well.
Oh, luscious, beautiful.
Luscious locks.
Just, I mean, flowing.
It's very, very 90s hair.
And like, any, like, sort of, like not sad. Like, I thought about, like, oh, Tiananmen Square. Okay. Oh, all right. or whatever. But, like, I don't want to go that.
The guy on the side of the tank.
I'm on the tank.
Yeah, like, next to the tank, like, whoa, hey, buddy, you might want to move.
Yeah. Some kind of subdued, but not awful photo. That is, like, like at least 33% haunting, but the rest like just nice and just me in the background with that cocked head, thumbs up smile. Yeah,
like, that one. Like you're really approving of that woman.
For everybody who's wondering what we're talking about here, if you look on the Twitter or on Facebook or just on the show on Podbean, that the picture of Tim doing this will be the picture I use for the show. Just so everybody is not completely clueless to what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I've already decided this. As soon as Tim showed me that picture, I was like, I know what I'm doing with this. I'm showing the world. So, speaking of worlds, my answer is so when I was going through like the top 100 pictures, like there was a Reddit thread on Ask Reddit, like what's the best like picture or what's the most famous picture you know of, and I would say like, you know, 80% of them were very very sad pictures or like haunting pictures, like. Maybe 15% were like sciencey pictures, and 5% of them were kind of happy pictures, or 4% were like celebrities, and then 1% were happy. The picture I would choose, though, is one of those is sort of in that 15% of sciencey pictures. There are two I was thinking of. The first one would be the Pillars of Creation. So, for those who don't know what that is, it is the picture from the Hubble Telescope. In 1995, is one of the most famous pictures it's taken, and it's of the Eagle Nebula, a star-forming patch of space 6,500 light-years from Earth, in the constellation Serpens Cauda. I don't know if I said that right, but it basically looks like about three giant smokestacks. I would be in that picture doing literally anything. Because literally anything in that picture, first off, how the hell am I alive? Second off, how the hell did I get there? And third off, why the fuck am I in this picture? That would be why I would be in that picture. Literally anything.
Like in a spacesuit or just floating or what?
I mean, either way, honestly. Okay. But yeah, floating would just be like, but I guess I would just kind of be like a corpse, like floating to the picture.
What if we did it where like you were dead? And we shot you out of a cannon, and like 6,500 light years later, you show up and they take the photo, and it's just you're sort of very well preserved because it's the, you know, it's space.
Cold, dark of space.
Yeah, it's 6,600 year old Will Baser, like floating and floating through the smokestacks.
It's like the car that Elon Musk shot into space, but it's me. As a carcass.
But like it's got that, you know how like when planes find this guy, there's a huge white flag behind them with like the letters, this is how he wanted to go. Like this was a huge flag behind you as you flow through space.
So the second picture though is also one of the more famous ones. It's of Neil Armstrong walking on the moon. Also, don't care if I'm in a spacesuit or not. Don't care if I'm dead or not in this picture. I would rather be alive, but just a picture, just me holding a sign saying this is fake. Just to add fuel to the fire. Just for funsies. Just to create all those...
for the lulls, as the kids say.
Yeah, exactly. For the lulls. just me in the background just messing up history. That would be fun.
Yeah. A lot of my students say that that's some bougie shit right there. So, bougie. Which I was excited to realize means bourgeoisie.
Okay, yeah, go.
Which is a great word. So as uncomfortable as I was when they would say bougie shit, I was like, oh, I'm glad you know what bourgeoisie means. That's good. That's a good thing. So, bourgeoisie is an important word.
Tim, explain to me how that would be bougie as fuck.
Well, you like nice things. That's a very important photo. You would like to be in that photo, telling people why it's wrong, you're bougie.
All right, Johnny, tell me why that's not bougie whatsoever.
I would say that it's more just trolly. It's Will having taking a moment to enjoy his secret InfoWars fan self, where he thinks everyone's a reptilian and the frogs are gay. That's it.
Well, the water, the chemicals in the water do turn the frogs gay.
They do make the frogs gay.
That is a fact. That's science. You can't. Yeah, it's science. You can't disprove that. And even if you do, it's obviously the reptiles who are controlling our society, like Hillary Clinton.
But I don't drink water. Fish pee in it.
All right. That's why Tim is sustained by whiskey.
Yep.
There's no water in whiskey, so we're aware. But let's go ahead and get on with
maybe in the bougie whiskey.
Just Johnny's tears and Oklahoma State 3-point shots.
Speaking of that, let's go ahead and get into this 3-loss streak where, I guess we could have seen that.
Go back to talking about all of
Hook 'em. I'll see you guys later.
Bougie,
hook 'em. Okay. Johnny not saying hook 'em. I'm signing off.
I guess we could see that coming from a mile away when we started talking about, hey, what if Texas wins 3 in a row? What happens then?
I would like to point out that I was the voice of reason saying, boy, I sure hope we beat Oklahoma State. You guys talked at length about being 3-0, and I was like, ooh, boy. So
I will say that I will give Tim credit that he did say, we could be 0-3. It's just as likely as 3-0, if not more so. So I'll give Tim that. He did say
yay
that.
For me for being a fucking savant. Let's go.
Tim slightly took over the lead pessimist role. Johnny, yeah. What are you doing here? What is your role?
I decided to, let him take a lap and I'll be back.
All right. So go ahead.
It was
and
sort of, it's that week where you reverse roles. It's like role play, except we weren't wearing leather this time. Like we just... Each of us decided to take the other person's role and see how it felt for a week.
Yeah, yeah. So, sucks. Yeah, it was your... Wasn't that your New Year's resolution, Johnny?
No, mine was to have a threesome with two women. I don't know what yours was.
But
Tim's is still to take ecstasy. I do remember that. I remember that very clearly. Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into why this happened. So what went wrong in each game? Now, Tim, you kind of touched on what happened in the Oklahoma State game, which is Oklahoma State caught fire and Texas came out flat. But is that really all that happened in that game that caused Texas to lose what should have been one of their more winnable and necessary games to win games, falling apart to the season?
Well, kind of. If Oklahoma State doesn't shoot that well from, I think Waters was like 5 from 5 from deep or something like that. When you get into the Big 12 conference, and I don't want to throw away the baby with the backwater here as we get into the show, but there's a lot of good teams in this conference, and particularly there's a lot of solid defenses in this conference. And when you get into some of those games, like a possession with 13 minutes left in the first half where someone hits a crazy contested three can make a difference. And Oklahoma State got like 2 or 3 of those. And, in a game like that where Texas was playing so poorly in the first half where they just had turnover after frickin' turnover, I want to say Ramey had – anyways, that was a while ago. I should have this in front of me. But, we struggled. Eli Long struggled in that game. Courtney struggled in that game. And so Texas was having some issues with their offensive execution, and then Oklahoma State hit a tough three, and then they hit an open three, and then they got a good bucket in transition, and they rebounded pretty well. And it was just sort of like this perfect storm of wow, Oklahoma State's riding this wave of feeling really good about themselves and hitting some good shots, and we struggled. And so, if Oklahoma State, shoots marginally from three in that first half, we come back and win that game. We played well enough in the second half that we could win that game. But they hit just enough in the first half that we didn't end up coming back and taking that one. So I think that Texas was, I don't know if they read their own clippings or were excited about being 2-0, but we had some uncharacteristic turnovers in the first half. And then I think they were down by 19 or so as time got on. And that was just kind of too much. And then... amplified by the fact that when we did have an opportunity at the end of the game to win, Kerwin did not make a great play. We'll talk about that later on as well,
that's going to be a theme for this show.
It's weird because you don't want to say hats off to Oklahoma State because we certainly played into their hands a little bit, but if Lindy Waters shoots 5 for 5 from three again this year, I'll be surprised. I don't think he will, but he had one of those games where, okay, he hit some really good shots. And then who was the guy against Mooney had the game of his life in the Texas Tech game, and Garrett hit like it was 3 for his first 3 from three against Kansas. So it was one of those things where if you start with the Oklahoma State game, it was surprising to see them shoot so well and play so efficiently offensively in the first half, and we couldn't come back.
So there is and I know we're going to get into Pomeroy more later, which is fine, but there is a Pomeroy stat that he refers to as luck. And effectively what the luck statistic is the divergence from expected results. In other words, if Texas is expected to win this game 5 times out of 10, and they win it 2 out of 10 or 8 out of 10, that 3-game difference is factored into the luck factor.
Are they like ranked 351st in luck?
That they seems like what it is. 333rd
wow.
out of 353.
That was close.
Yeah.
Damn.
The for lack of a better term, Texas is one of the unluckiest teams in D1. And some of that is their own doing. Some of it is not. And, you know, we can debate about what is and what isn't theirs. I think the thing is, if you consider that if Texas even hits their normal rate of threes, like even if they just hit 30% of their threes in Oklahoma State, they win that game.
Easily, pretty easily at least.
Yeah, I mean, it would be, you know, what was it, out of 22, that would be 6-ish, 7, 6 or 7. So that's another 6 to 9 points. So yeah, they win that game by 3 to 6 points, you know, give or take, depending on, you know, when they hit them and dependencies that happen from that point. They had their coldest game of the year from three by far against Oklahoma State. And
we've had some cold ones too. So
yeah, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as, holy shit, they were 2 of 22 from three. What the fuck? Or you can equally look at it as, holy shit, they were 2 of 22 from three, and they almost won that fucking game. Like, it's in a perverse sort of way, it is a sign of how much better a team Texas is on a normal night than Oklahoma State, that they had a historically bad night from three and they still almost won that damn game.
But they didn't.
No, they didn't. And that's fair. Yeah, they didn't. Yeah. And it sucks. It's one of those games that if Texas has aspirations on being a, you know, third or fourth place team in the Big 12 or second place team, however you want to look at it, they need to pick up those sort of games. And they didn't. So in the end, it's a loss and it hurts.
So it's hard to believe that it's just luck that is killing Texas here. I mean, it has to be something other than luck. It can't just be, because some people don't believe in luck. That's just...
And that's,
well, he's trying to quantify the strangeness that is sports. So midway through the first half against Oklahoma State, it's end of the shot clock. Waters has the ball at the top of the key, like he's almost dead center in the middle of the court, as far as like on their part of the court and on their offensive end. And Oklahoma State kind of runs a failed pick and roll. Waters has the ball. Roach is right on him, like literally right on him. Waters takes a quick step to his left, like turns and squares, and takes a contested three off of no dribbles and hits it. Like just like hits this shot he makes 1 out of 15 times in those kind of situations. He made it. And so you know, it's, you're right, Will. Certainly you're right. Like me sitting here talking to you about, I knew luck was going to come up at some point because our number is so low on Kempom with that. But us talking about luck, we're just unlucky, is kind of ridiculous. But on the same token, like, that shit's weird. Like, he's not going to hit that shot the rest of the year. Like, he maybe will hit one or none of those shots all of the rest of the year. It went in against us. And I don't know why those shots keep on going in against us. I don't know why Garrett hit those shots against us against Kansas. Like he was, 4 of 29 or something like that for the rest of the season for Kansas. Like, but they do go in, and it seems like those kind of shots keep on going in, and I can't understand why And so if people are sick of us saying we're better than we look, we're not that far off. Some of these statistics and meta-analysis pieces say that we're pretty okay, but yet we keep on losing. How can those things kind of mix together? But it's just weird.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that when I'm not a big believer in, I will call it momentum or luck in sort of the abstract terms, but I think that it is fair to use a term like luck when you are trying to quantify the unquantifiable. It's easier to say they're unlucky than to say their results diverge from what you expect, because that's really fucking nerdy, and that's exactly in my wheelhouse, but not in a lot of people's. So, if you look at like the Oklahoma State stats, they Oklahoma State turned the ball over on 23% of their possessions. They had a good night from three. They had a decent night from the free throw line. But what they did is they made up for turnovers with rebounding, for example. Like one of the things you see, not to get too far into the other games, but one of the differences you see from Oklahoma State to the other two games that we're going to talk about is the focus on rebounding, especially in the Kansas game that Texas had. Like, neither Oklahoma State or Texas are very good rebounding teams. Like, they're okay. They're, sort of D1 average or a little below, depending on what metric you want to look at. But Oklahoma State had a much better focus on that sort of thing. And it is one of the things that got fixed in the Tech game and even more so in the Kansas game. But those are the little things that sort of end up being the, a factor in quote unquote luck.
So they get fixed going through those next two games. But let's go ahead and take a look at Tech. What happened against Tech that, again, Texas couldn't put away another close game? What happened there? Why does Texas end up falling at home to Tech in a game they probably could have won?
So, if you want to look, here's one perspective I want to look at, and it is that if Texas takes care of Oklahoma State, and they are, what would they be at that point? 3-0 in conference at that point, and they lose the next two games. If they lose to Texas Tech, who's ranked 8th by 6, and they lose to Kansas, who is ranked 7th. At Kansas by 2. Is anybody nearly as worried about this team as they are right now? Like, I feel like the Oklahoma State loss sort of sent into, not overdrive, but it really sort of amped up the concern and the worry about this team. Like, the Tech game was a good game for Texas. They played a very solid offensive game. I haven't looked at the stats for the Iowa State game tonight, but prior to that game, Texas put up more points per possession against Texas Tech than anyone else had all season, including Duke. They played a good game in terms of rebounding. They did a good job there. Their free throws were pretty solid. They shot 35% from three, which is good enough. They did a lot of good things. Like, they assisted on a lot of shots. But at the end of the day, I mean, Tech is a top 10 team for a good reason. And even though Texas is at home, it's fair to say that the Texas Tech game should have been, I'll call it a coin flip. And Tech did enough more to win that game than Texas did.
Well, they got a really good game from Mooney. Yeah. And Culver came up at the end of the game. Like, he played a very good game overall. We did a good job of guarding him in the first half, and then he kind of wore us down, or I don't know what it was for sure.
Yeah, but that's fair. Yeah.
But Mooney was 8 for 10. I think he scored 22 points in that game. He has not done that this year.
Yeah, 8 for 10, 3 for 3 from 3. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, And it's weird. Like I didn't think that Texas particularly played well enough to win against Oklahoma State. I did think they played well enough to win against Texas Tech, but some weird shit happened in that game. And again, I thought that there were some growing pains for some of the Texas younger players that I was surprised about. But one of the things that I want to hit on is, and I'm sure that Texas fans will not be surprised about this, is just sort of the frustration that I have, that everyone has, from Shaka to me to whoever, that Kerwin and Dylan just, more often than not, just don't seem to be able to get it done when we need them most. And Dylan really struggled in that game against Tech, rebounded well, as he has all year, but just has his issues with executing on the offensive end.
Especially Kerwin from 3 feet and in.
Yeah. Kerwin comparably had moments and glimpses of driving like you wanted him to, really attacking like you wanted him to, and then not, like, having success when he would attack and then not forcing the issue for 10 minutes at a time. It's like, we need that. And so when you look at that Tech game, I was impressed with the fact that Tech, I thought, really took care of business better than I thought they would towards the end of the game, considering who they kind of had this year. They don't have that point guard like they did with Keenan Evans the last couple of years, but they looked pretty good down the stretch. They ran some good sets, and they were able to kind of figure out a way to keep us from scoring. And when we had some of those bunnies down low or had a chance to attack the paint, we didn't do it. And that's a tough lesson to learn because, yeah, that as winnable as Oklahoma State was, it's pretty painful to play well against Tech and to not win.
And I think if I can be the role everyone knows me as on this podcast as the unbridled optimist and Matt Coleman lover, I think one
it's
thing
funny
really,
it's true. It's funny because it's
it is,
true.
It is very true. Yeah, no one on here loves Matt Coleman like I do. I the last two games, Matt Coleman has played at a very high level. I mean, frankly, since conference play started, for the most part, he's played at a very high level. But the last two games, he's really stepped it up. And if there is a sign of progress, if there is a sign for the future, people want to look at it is that. Matt Coleman is refound himself, and he is clearly playing at a level that Texas needs him to play at for them to battle for a top half, top third of the conference finish.
My dude has a 9-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. 9-to-1.
Yeah, 9-to-1, and he has
Tim, Your dude, I don't remember you being the Matt Coleman guy. It was clearly Johnny, as he just said.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go back to talking to Brock Cunningham, you hack. I don't know if it's still true tonight, because I didn't look at TCU's stats from last night, but going into Tuesday, Matt Coleman had more assists than anyone else in the Big 12 in conference play.
Yep.
Like by a significant amount. I think it was like 26-19 or something like that. As frustrating as it is to watch Osakowski miss bunny after bunny after bunny, as frustrating as it is to watch what Snoop has done in the last possession of two of the last three games, it is good to see that the guys who will be replacing them going forward seem to be starting to take up the mantle. And if it doesn't pan out this year, hopefully next year it will start to really take hold.
So while we're on this Snoop Roach, the end of games, let's go ahead and break into the next one, which is Kansas. Now, how awesome would it have been if Snoop Roach does his damn job at the end of that damn game and we win in fucking Lawrence? Amazing!
Let's break down everything that went wrong with that. So the first is, in that timeout at the end of the game, Shaka was on the side. It was Neil Berry running that timeout, right? So whatever frustration people have with Shaka as an offensive coach, he wasn't running it. The guy he brought in to be the offensive catalyst for his staff was running that timeout. Okay, so they did that you know, pick and roll and replace that they had been working most of the second half, and it worked well. So it was Barry doing that. So you can't even say, well, he doesn't listen to Shaka. Second of all, we got the look that we wanted, right? So they ran it in a way that Jace, when you saw the setup of the play, Jace was in a kind of a weird position, like he was actually playing a stretch four, like he was this yep. he was the screener, and we got what we wanted.
They did sort of a mini horns play on the side.
Yeah, and so Ramey is on the far side, Osikowski goes down to the very far corner, and around the ball, Febres sets a faux screen or whatever, right? He makes contact, and then he comes back out, he pops back out, and he's there. So like, the look that Barry wanted, he gets. And it was out of a timeout, so you know that like they had said, this is what it's going to be, this is what we want you to do. and 16 seconds later, Kerwin does not execute it.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to say about Shaka as like, I don't like what he does, or he doesn't know his offensive stuff, like he wasn't in charge of the timeout. and Kerwin, for whatever reason, freaks out or like decides like, fuck what they said, I want the ball. And I'm happy to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like I'm more likely to say like, okay, well, he was nervous. He thought things were going to happen in a certain way. He must have seen something. But literally, he dragged his defender. And I sent you guys a text that night. He dragged his defender right to Jace.
Like, yeah, it was his defender who contested the shot.
Yes,
it was not Febres' defender.
No, yeah. Febres' defender was 4 feet away. Now, if Vic had not been there, Febres' defender would have been closer. Like, he would have had, like, more of an angle to close because
he didn't have another defender in his way, yeah.
right. But Kerwin's responsibility was either to be in the deep corner or to cut hard towards the basket. He did neither. He floated in the exact spot where he shouldn't have, bringing his defender to Febres. And
how do you end up behind Coleman in that? Like,
the play design was great. I mean, you had Coleman driving because he's the guy you trust the most with the basketball in that moment as a driver. If the drive isn't there, then you kick it out to Jace Febres, who is on fucking fire. I mean, literally, I texted y'all during the game when Jace Febres was 1 for 7. I was like, God damn it, Jace, do your damn job and hit threes. And then as soon as I said that, he was like, he went on fire. And he was on fire for the rest of the game. He's your on-fire shooter. You have your guy who's good at driving. You have the perfect play set up. And then it just goes – it falls flat. Now, the thing about the game, though, now it's the game doesn't fall down to one play. Texas could have completely had that game wrapped up if Jackson Hayes doesn't get into foul trouble right off the bat.
Well, so, okay, a couple things. Before we get into that, I want to – there are – small quibbles I have with that play call or play design, not the play call. Like, I like the call. I like having Coleman and Febres as sort of the two primary options. My minor quibbles, aside from Snoop, do your goddamn job, is that I would have liked to see Osikowski on the far side dive in after the shot to maybe try and get a tip in. That's a minor thing. Like, sure. Because there was nobody near the basket for a tip in, and I understand they're trying to space the floor. They're trying to bring everybody out as far as they can. But it would have been nice to see Osikowski, the only plus rebounder they had on the floor, try and go and get a putback. Although, given how he shoots from 3 feet, who fucking knows if that even goes in?
Put him on the 3-point line. He's more efficient.
Maybe he could have gotten it from 10 feet, where he seems to be better than he is from 3 feet. Anyway, so what were we even talking about? I'm still frustrated.
My hairline.
Play.
Like, no, it's terrible.
Jackson Hayes is in that game. Texas did a wonderful job of really focusing on the fact that Kansas's big man is out, and they were going to take advantage of rebounding. Something the first time that they were actually able to do that this year, where they're able to take advantage of rebounding and then kick it out to their guys so that they can be a volume shooting team. Kind of like what they're built to be at this point. They finally were able to do that, but without Jackson Hayes in there, most of the time, the height advantage is no longer there. your rebounding, yeah, okay, Dylan Osakowski can probably out-rebound these guys, but also he's missing those bunny shots.
Well,
your best
so,
big man out is out super early because of foul trouble.
Well, so to be clear, Jackson Hayes fucking sucks at rebounding. Like, he's good at rebounding things in his area, and that's it. Like, and this is, and it's, he is a very good player. I don't like I don't want to overstate this, but he is. I mean, he is 24 months removed from being in a starting lineup in, you know, he was a reserve 24 months ago on a high school team, and he was probably 10 inches shorter than he is right now. So he's learning, and I have no doubt that he will eventually learn how to rebound more effectively, how to anticipate where the rebounds will be, etc. But having said that, I have watched him watch missed shots more times than I can count, where he should be jumping for a rebound, but he's watching it on the rim, and somebody else is anticipating that and beating him to the rebound. So his rebounding is a problem. Having
you
said
can't
that,
tell me that I'm wrong saying that because Jackson Hayes isn't in there, that Texas had a better shot. Or wait, did I say that right? I don't know. Anyways,
that,
you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. So the point I'm going to get to is that this is the sort of opponent where I was always concerned about Jackson Hayes staying on the floor, because a guy like Dedrick Lawson, who is an upperclassman, who is a grown-ass man, knows how to, especially a guy like him who has a below the rim game, knows how to get guys like Hayes in foul trouble very quickly on a neutral floor, much less in the fog where they're going to get a favorable whistle. He knows how to establish position before Hayes knows he's going to establish position. He knows how to bury him under the basket because he's stronger than him and he's gotten to the point he needs to get first. This was a bad matchup for Jackson, and it's the growing pains of being, you know, 18 years old playing in Big 12 basketball, is that there are some guys out there that are just going to do that to you. I mean, if Lawson did that to him, Udoka would have had him in foul trouble in half the time if he was healthy. So it's a learning experience for Hayes. He needs to understand and sort of internalize the shortcomings he has. And to his credit, he seems like he's a very willing learner. But this is one of those games that he's just going to rack up fouls because he doesn't know how not to at this point. And it's a game where, thankfully, Sims showed up a little bit. He was able to provide some minutes where he picked up some rebounds. He made approximately as many shots from 3 feet as Dylan Osakowski did, which is like zero.
Hit two free throws.
Yeah, he did. He hit two free throws. Like, they were seven. What was it, 7 for 7 from the line? Like, holy shit! And it wasn't like all Matt Coleman. It was like guys like Sims this is fucking amazing. So many parts of this should have been a fucking victory. excuse me, I'm going to go scream into a pillow again for a while. I'm happy to see that Sims did well in his limited minutes, and maybe he's getting a little unfucked, which is good. If he can continue to be a plus rebounder, he can take a few minutes from Dylan, and maybe he starts putting back some shots that Dylan apparently is incapable of because he forgot he has hands. I don't know why. God damn it, fucking Snoop in that last play. I swear to God. I'm gonna lay my head down.
So while you do that, Johnny, Tim, how does these 0-3, this 0-3 stretch right here, does it affect Texas's tourney chances at all, especially that loss against Oklahoma State?
It has to. There's no way that it can't. I think as Oklahoma State plays the rest of the season, it'll be, you know, it will be somewhere between a bad to a not very good loss. But like anything, what really affects these games is that because they were all so winnable, we'll look back at them and say, well, if we'd have just won that game against Tech, or if we could have possibly pulled out that Kansas game, maybe the committee says, oh, well, they can do this. But right now, all we've done is almost come back against Oklahoma State, looked okay but lost at home against Tech, and gave Kansas a run, but fell, you know, but fell in the end. So I don't know. Like a couple of years ago, was it Shaka's first year or his? It must have been his first year. I think we won on the road at Baylor. They played really well and won on the road at Baylor. And Baylor didn't look very good. Like they'd had a stretch where they kind of were struggling, and then Baylor kind of went on a run.
Yeah.
And I think they beat us at home, and then they beat us again in the Big 12 tournament. And like I still am holding out some hope that that is us. That, you know, there are teams every single year that it takes them a while to get their shit together. And we've seen enough good things that it could be there. But look, we're 10-7 right now. We're 10-7, and we have a losing record in the conference, and we have a lot of tough games left to play. Now, TCU is kind of in disarray. I think they've lost three players over the last couple of weeks to transfers.
And Jalen Fisher is out.
Yeah, Kansas obviously is going to have to figure some things out without Udoka. They played okay against us. They got a couple of good performances from guys they normally wouldn't be able to count on. Oklahoma State's lost another. I think Oklahoma State's down to 9 scholarship players.
They dismissed 3 guys, including one guy who scored 10 points against Texas. So thanks for fucking waiting on that.
West Virginia looks like ass, you know. So there's reason to believe that there's wins out there for us. But it's not as if anything is going to be a gimme-er for sure. And when you drop close games, as every single game we've played this year has been close, when you drop those close games, while you don't want to think about each individual game as far as its cumulative effect, but they do. And you know, while I could see the committee letting in a Texas team that's, you know, that's 18-13, would they let in a 17-14 team? I don't know, man. That's not a lot of wins. Would they let in a 16-15 team? Almost for sure not. You know, so we're going to have to find some way to figure out some of these games, because while I do believe that we're quality, eventually the committee has to say, well, Texas is good and they could maybe even beat some tournament teams, but we can't reward them for losing this many games.
Yeah, especially not over another team that's done better against better competition.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's a thought we'll have to figure out.
I still maintain that we are at a point where Texas... So there are 5 teams right now in Pomeroy who are projected to be between 8-10 and 10-8, which is a couple bounces of the ball one way or the other. And Iowa State was in that group until they won tonight against Tech. They're now projected to be 11-7, but they're sort of up and down a little bit. So there are winnable games, and I think that with a team like Texas where they're... I'm going to go back to the Kansas game. What bothers me so much about that loss, not just the fact that that was the closest Texas had been to winning in Kansas in 7 years since they actually won the game. That was their closest margin of defeat in 7 years, is that it's one of those games that they go, okay, all right, well, they won in fog, so they're in. Like, it's the tiebreaker kind of thing. Like, you're looking for those tiebreaker wins. And, like, winning at Tech would be a tiebreaker. Or, you know, sweeping Kansas State would be, you know, potentially a tiebreaker if they keep coming back the way they look like they are. Like, if Texas goes 9-9 or better in conference, I still think they make it in, even if it's sort of a play-in game situation. You know, depending on how they do in the conference tournament. But it's still there for the taking. And they have played the toughest game they're going to play in the season, which is at Kansas. So it gets a little easier from here, minimally easier from here.
And we've kind of already gone into this, and we were talking about that just now, but the KenPom rating for Texas. Texas has some incredible numbers in KenPom, except for that luck variant.
Yep.
But to me, it kind of seems like the exact opposite of the football. Like, in both major men's sports, I guess you can count baseball as major, but I'm going to say football and basketball are probably the more major nationally watched
unquestioned
sports,
yeah, no
right?
doubt. Yeah.
They are bucking the trends of advanced statistics. Now, Texas football, I mean, when I was on 4th and 5, I was saying, you know, like, they're kind of, like, the advanced statistics are kind of right. Texas shouldn't be winning the games that they are because of how they play against worse teams, right? But they kill it against really good teams. So they buck the trends there. Texas here in basketball, it's the exact opposite. Texas football ranked really high, but they're not very well, you know, they don't look really good in the advanced statistics. Texas looks really good in the advanced statistics, but when you put it into practice, they don't look good in basketball.
They've unbucked the trend. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. So what exactly is going on there? Is it something, I mean, I don't want to say advanced statistics wrong. I know some fans definitely feel that way. I do not. But what is the hidden measurement there in the advanced statistics that I guess it's not accounting for? Is it really just that Texas is 330-whateverth in luck?
I mean, that's one piece of the puzzle. I think some of it is that, and I posted this a few days ago on Twitter.
Really need Jeff Haley here for this as well.
Yeah. He can start writing on the blackboard all the equations. One of the things is that it kind of sucks to be in the Big 12 for Texas, because if they were in some of the other, if they were, do you want to just wait for him?
Yeah. What the hell? Tim just completely dropped off the call.
He just left. I'm going to assume he was out of internet.
I'm just going to text him real fast. The fuck, Tim? Well, I guess we'll just wait for him to come back online. Excuse us for a second. Oh, there he is.
Oh,
hey.
Oh,
hey, he's alive. Ooh. Welcome back to the world, Tim.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah,
sorry
you
about
should
that.
Be.
Yeah, because that's my role in this podcast is to fall out randomly.
All of a sudden I got like that little notification in the middle of my screen that says your connection is bad. And then it was just stuck, so I restarted Skype. So my audacity is still going. So, I mean, we should be okay with that. So, sorry to make extra work for you, Will. But
nice. thanks, Tim.
Will doesn't need sleep.
No, sleep is overrated. Let's go ahead and where were we?
You want to do like an intro into sort of the Pomeroy and what?
Yeah.
You know.
So I'll do this fake intro. Ready? KenPom bucking trends. Why the fuck, Johnny? Why real world not KenPom? Go.
Sorry. God damn it. I just completely lost my train of thought with the way you said that. It was very caveman Will just gave me a prompt. All right. So the part of the problem with being Texas is that you were in the Big 12 conference. Because if you were this rating in the Big 12 or you were in this rating but not in the Big 12 conference, in most other conferences you'd be doing a lot better. I posted a tweet, I don't know, last week or the week or so ago, where basically what I said was, here's what they would be ranked in the other conferences. And right now, they would be first in the Pac-12. Like, they would be leading the Pac-12. They would probably be undefeated or close to it. Some of this is a factor of, you know, yes, they are currently 28th. They actually jumped three spots when they lost to Kansas because they did so much better against Kansas than Pomeroy's predictions expected. They're 28th, but they're surrounded by really good teams, and it's a merciless conference where just being really good does not guarantee you the results that show, okay, again, if they're in the Pac-12, they're probably going to be the conference champion. They're going to be an automatic bid. They probably get a fairly high seed because they're playing a lot of trash teams. Whereas in the Big 12, even the trash teams are not that trash. So there is one of the main divergences between real life and the advanced statistics is that the conference they're in is pretty brutal.
I'm going to go in a very similar vein and say I am as excited about Texas's future right now at 2-3 as I was when they were 2-0. Now, maybe that doesn't bear out for this season, but I do think that the roster that we've put to, well, that we've, that Shaka and his staff have put together is filled with talented, diverse players that I think are getting better at a pretty neat rate. Like, it's fun to watch Ramey grow. It's neat to see Coleman ascending into what I think could be one of the better point guards in the conference. And then if you're one of the better point guards in the Big 12, then you're one of the better point guards in the country. It's neat to see Sims hopefully working his way back into shape. It's, you know, like, I think there's a lot of positive points. And where I will, this is cherry picking, obviously, too. Like, when I look at KenPom's rating, I do see a team that is way better than their record. And they're not the best team with 7 losses, believe it or not. Like, KenPom has, I think, Florida ranked a few spots ahead of Texas, even though they're 9-7 and where we're 10-7. But but we talk so much about context, and we talk so much about, like, okay, why did they lose? Okay, what actually happened? Like, if you can, as best as possible, step away from, well, it doesn't matter why they lost or how they lost, it just simply matters that they lost. And that's true. Like, it is true. And we'll see if that ends up costing Shaka his job or not. But but when you look at this team and how they performed, they have a couple of things that are both in their favor and against them. What's in their favor is when they've been good, they've been really stinking good, right? So in their games, when they've played quite well, the win over North Carolina, the win at Kansas State, they've looked tremendous. They've looked quite bad in some other games, how they shot from three against Oklahoma State, how they look kind of overall against Radford. There's a lot of that there. But also, to Johnny's point about the schedule, if you go throughout the Big 12, some of the other teams in the conference, like, when they play the worst teams on their schedule, they're playing teams that are, like, in the bottom 300s. And we're not playing those games. And so that's going to help us because it helps our strength of schedule. But it also, like we don't have a lot of cupcakes that we played. And that's kind of our fault, too, because we haven't executed like we can. But I'm rambling. but Texas is not as bad as their record would indicate. What we are missing sorely is Kerwin Roach being an all Big 12 kind of player. And you hate to put it at his feet because you know he's trying. You know he cares about Texas. He's been here 4 years. He could have left last year. He didn't. He's back, and he would come back not because, oh, I can get way better playing another year at Texas than I could in the G League. He's back because he wants to help us do well. He's not getting it done. We don't have that guy. The rest of our team is solid enough that we're one of the better teams in the country, but it's not kind of working out. And so what KenPom then sees is Oklahoma State gets a huge game from Waters. That's not who they are. He's not going to shoot like that again. Texas Tech gets a big game from Mooney. He's a fine player. He's not an 8-for-10 guy, 3-for-3 from the outside. That's just, he's not that guy, and he's shown that. Even when he was in South Dakota, he wasn't that guy. Frickin' Marcus Garrett was, what was he like, 8-for his first 9 from the field?
He was 4-of-22 coming into the game.
Yeah. I mean, every single team in the conference is going to help off of him onto Lawson for the entire rest of the year. Every team in the conference is going to help off of him. And that's probably going to help them stay in games. For us against Kansas, it lost us the game. Like, he's not going to shoot like that again, probably, right? And we talked last week about how Vic was kind of fool's gold from deep. Well, he wasn't against us. So yeah. Why would he be fool's gold against, you know, against Iowa State? Or why would, you know, anyways, it's just weird stuff. And I don't know, how it keeps on happening. But I do know that I believe in my heart of hearts that this roster can compete with anybody, that we're going to be, I think, even better next year. And yet, we're just, for these crazy reasons, we're not winning those games. And so, I think, for whatever reason, KenPom has been able to put together a mathematical equation that showcases what I think to be true, and yet it still goes against what basically any casual Texas fan would see when they watch us play.
So, on that note, let's go ahead and take a look at the next game on the schedule. And I'll call it the Red River Clankout, because both these teams, not the best at shooting threes. So, I don't feel like a shootout is the best terminology. So, I took a page from Johnny's book and called it the Clankout. So, let's go ahead and take a look at Texas versus Oklahoma. Y'all, what does Texas need to look out for against these Sooners, who have really been surprising this year, except for the loss they just suffered last night?
Yeah, I think that what's going to be interesting is there's a couple things at play here. How Texas is going to try and limit Christian James, which is not a sentence I really thought I would be saying coming into this season.
Christian James.
Yeah, nor did he. His first three seasons have been, you know, not bad, but sort of untapped potential. And he seems to have really kicked it into another gear. He's done quite well. And I want to see how the guards deal with Aaron Calixte, because he's a good 3-point shooter. He's good at addition out assists. But he's a 5'11 guard, and it's possible to give him problems with superior length. The other guys I'm less concerned about, there's always the chance that Jemani McNeese has some sort of big show out game. But I kind of feel like, given that Oklahoma tends to play at a higher tempo than Texas does, and if we're going to come up with complaints about Texas this year, it's that their tempo has not gotten appreciably faster when I really wish it had. One of the things, and I think this is part of what you saw with the Kansas game, is that when teams want to push tempo, Texas can respond well, and it actually sort of plays into their natural abilities. So I am hopeful that what we will see is on the offensive end, especially if Texas can focus on rebounding like they have, Texas can get out and run a little bit on this team. I don't know if they score a ton more, but it would be nice to see them push tempo and try to get some open shots.
I think Texas matches up against Oklahoma about as well as they do with maybe anyone in the conference, because, like you said, they get a lot of points from their guards, but they also, when they do, it's often in kind of free-flowing circumstances. I think defensively we match up with them pretty well, provided Kerwin plays like we think he can defensively, and we'll see if that happens or not. I think obviously Jackson, as long as he plays within himself, like, he doesn't have to do anything special against Oklahoma. What's his name? Is it Manic or whatever?
Brady Manic. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good offensive rebounder, so we'll have to kind of look at that as far as how we keep him off of the glass. But I think some of their weaknesses match up with some of our strengths in a positive way for us. And I do like against Tech and against Kansas how we have executed offensively when we've been in some tougher situations. I like that we seem to kind of be a little bit gearing more towards Ramey as opposed to the first couple games in conference where it seemed like Eli got some of those minutes in the second half. Courtney got some of those minutes here most recently, and I think that's helped us. Yep. So, you know, there's a lot for me to feel pretty confident about, but as we could say with almost everybody in the conference, Oklahoma can play, right? If they came out and shot really well and we struggled a little bit, they certainly are capable of beating us here in Austin. But I like the matchup, and I think that they can play well against them. But if it's shitty Texas, then it's going to be shitty results.
If it's Radford, Texas, then yes, this right. is a problem.
Right.
I think with but one thing I do want to see is that I want to see if Hayes, if he is on Manic as opposed to Dylan, maybe if he gets out to the 3-point line, because Manic can hit threes. So mm-hmm. I do want to see mm-hmm. if Hayes is switched on to him, if he defends out to the 3-point line like he should.
So I guess I kind of want to get more technical here. Is there anything that Texas should be doing on defense or on offense to exploit Oklahoma?
I mean, I think with even though this sort of the ironic part about the Kansas game is that Texas jumped into the top 50 in offensive efficiency, but they jumped out of the top 10 defensive efficiency. I mean, they're 18th, so they're not bad.
They're still top 2% or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, like yeah, it's not a bad mark by any stretch of the imagination. I think as long as Texas, the fine line with a team like Texas is, do they try to get some offensive rebounds or do they go back to get their defense set up? And given that the tempo that Oklahoma plays at, I feel like they might sort of schematically give up on some offensive rebounds to make sure they get back and get their defense set. Which I understand. I still would kind of like to see Osakowski try and go for some of those, but that's. I think this game could potentially be lost for Texas on the rebounds because Oklahoma is a pretty solid rebounding team, especially on the defensive end. They're very good at getting defensive rebounds, so that's a cause for concern. I think that's something that Oklahoma could exploit to get themselves extra possessions and get themselves extra shots.
We need to limit penetration as often as possible. We have struggled limiting penetration off of pick and roll looks. I think that one of the things that I'm surprised at in some cases is that Mo Bamba was so good at hedging with his length that he kind of, you know, single-handedly cut off a lot of those angles last year. And Jackson has struggled where I thought he would be okay with that just because he's so quick. He has struggled with turning or with allowing guards to turn the corner against him. So we need to do a better job of that. And I think Kerwin and Matt both can progress in that as the year goes on. But when teams get into lane against us, we struggle when we're having to rotate and recover. So Oklahoma will almost for sure try that. The other thing for us is when it's been someone other than Matt penetrating for us, we've had a lot of issues with ball control. So whether it's Ramey or Long or Roach or Osakowski, we've really struggled with turning the ball over in some tough situations for us. And I don't know what it is, but our defensive transition – or our transition defense off of our turnovers has been absolutely terrible, just really, really bad. It feels like every time that we give up live ball turnovers, it turns into points. And so Oklahoma has the shooters and has the athletes to get out on the move against us. So how often are we turning that ball over where, okay, Eli gets a screen and drives in and the ball goes off of his leg and they're going the other way, or Ramey makes a bad pass and they're going the other way, or Kerwin, you know, dumps it off to nobody and they're going the other way or whatever it is. So, and that's tough to see because, you know, Will, when you talk about, hey, let's look for like some analytics here, Like, when you have an offense like ours that is so creativity-based and so free-flowing, it's tough to know from one game to the next, well, is the defense going to hedge here? Or are they going to push out more up top? Or are they going to sag a little bit more? And depending on what they do, will dictate what we do. So it's hard to, like, pick up on tendencies from our standpoint of, like, well, what way is Oklahoma going to guard us? We'll see. Now, in the past, Oklahoma has guarded us with some heavy pressure up top, like out to like 26, 27 feet. But they also have a very different lineup this year than they have in years past. So it's tough to say for sure what Kruger will do with these guys right now. But I do think we have to do a good job against them of getting them out of the paint. If we can take them out of the paint offensively, from our defense, their offense, if we can keep them out of the paint, they're going to struggle creating offense unless they're hitting contested threes off of the dribble. And if they can do that, well, okay, well, fine, whatever happens. But if we can make them take some more of those shots, we're looking good. And then offensively, for ourselves, if we can get a – it doesn't even have to be special. If we can get efficient, non-turnover basketball from Ramey and Long and Roach, at least we're on the plus side of that, then I think we can exploit them defensively, because they've got, you know, McNeese, right? Like Jimoney. Yeah. He's a decent shot blocker, but beyond him, they don't have a whole lot of rim protection. So we should have some opportunities to score in the paint. And if we can get some lane touches and get those, then all right.
So how important is this game to Texas? To win this game, how important is it for the season?
Every win is important, doubly so at the home wins, because you win a conference title on road wins, but you stay in the top half of the conference by defending your home court. And so I think as much as I would love to win at Norman, I want to start with a win in Austin, and then the win in Norman becomes a bonus.
Huge. It's huge. The difference between 2-4 and 3-3 is pretty gigantic, you know, because there's some games on our schedule that are going to be pretty tough to win. Like, can we win at Tech? I don't know. You know, can we win at Iowa State? I don't know. So if there's another couple of most likely losses, and we're already at 4 losses, then we can get to 9 or 10 losses pretty quickly. So whereas finding wins will be tough. But this is a game that they can and hopefully should win. And if they do...
Oh, we're doomed.
Yeah, we're doomed now. Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
If they do win... well, okay, shucks.
I think they're going to lose. There, it's all on Tim.
It's the anti-jinx. Yeah. I learned it on 4th and 5. The anti-jinx, it works.
All right, so after we lose this game, we're going to have to find a couple other games that we steal. But if they beat Oklahoma, then there's a lot of reason to say those last three games sucked, but we're okay. Let's really focus on the next few opponents and see what happens. If we lose to Oklahoma, then we're probably talking about, you know, is the NCAA tournament even really possible? Because if we can't beat them at home... then I don't know how we steal some of those other games that we need to make getting to the tournament really a likely goal.
There really is a role reversal between you and Johnny, man. It's crazy for the past week. But on that super happy note, thank y'all for pretending we were football for the past hour. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And... Johnny Brashear, where can we find you other than Grindr?
Sir, Grindr is old hat. They're much better apps now. I've learned this from my gay friends that apparently that joke is no longer relevant. I found that out the hard way. I am on Twitter and Instagram at BitterWhiteGuy and Discord, where I'm on one channel, and it's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is.
And Johnny, where in the world is Timothy Preston?
So Tim is making a little extra money on the side at Lumber Liquidators. It's a secondhand lumber store. It's not actually lumber from houses. It's they actually take lumber from the forest and then they put it into a building, not to actually build out the building. They just want to make it secondhand. And so so they take it out of the building, and then they beat the shit out of it with a hammer, and it becomes distressed. And then at that point, they sell it to us. And that is Tim's business plan, and he has made approximately $148 doing it.
Wow, Tim, what a profit. So, yeah. Tim, besides Lumber Liquidators,
but where can we find besides you? Besides crying onto a podcast, what are you doing?
Where else can we find you?
InsideTexas.com and on Twitter at InsideTexasHoop, no S. Come hang out with us. Our community is awesome. We have a lot of really good basketball posters at InsideTexas.com. And if I was more sober, I would name them. But I don't want to miss somebody, so I'm just going to say we're awesome. You'd love us.
But Tim,
love us.
Where can we find you on the basketball court?
Well, so the thing about me when I'm on the court is I'm very competent from the outside, and I can shoot it from outside with a lot of comfort. But I'm surprisingly good down low in the big with the big boys. But where I really excel is right in your fucking face.
And you guys can find us and our other podcasts on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel. What you listen to right now on Podbean, Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Podcasts, anywhere you can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. Thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em. 1, 2, 3, yeah! Hoo-wop-a-doop-a-doop-a-doo-a-hoo-wop-a-doop-a-doo-a-hoo-wop-a-doop-a-doo-a-hoo-wop-a-bow.